The blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Yamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day, oh, happy blessed place, oh, happy blessed time, oh, happy blessed path, oh, happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
We are
here to end suffering. If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
What should we look at this morning?
I'm going to speak just because I've been hearing the voice all morning. Don't talk in group today.
So you take that as the cue, talk.
Yes. I have. I'm sure if I thought about it, I had something deep in the town to say, but I really don't. It's just that that's what I've been hearing. So.
Take it on and talk.
And that's all I need to do. if something occurs later, perhaps
just call it out and talk. That's great. Thank you. Jen?
That just sparked for me, I don't know if it's related, but I've been looking at this interesting form of resistance. Mm. Which is very, well, it feels like it's subtle, though, of course, like everything, as I start to notice it, it's not actually so subtle. But it's this, like, so gross resistance would be, no, I don't want to do that, you know, that sort of thing. But this is just, it's almost like, and I guess this is what makes it subtle, there's a lack of conversation about it. There's just a, I'm not doing that. But not even, it's like that's not even said, at least that I'm conscious of. So this little, I've noticed it with this little content, which has been really helpful, and then, you know, I realize it's everywhere. Just this supplement I have to take, and I've never been a big sort of vitamins person and taking a lot of pills. For whatever reason, there, right? I'm not the kind of person who. And so I just watch not doing it. And this morning it was so interesting because then I'll be like, okay, all right, here we go. Today I'm going to take it, you know, all the ones that I need to take. And as I say, there's not this big kicking and screaming. It's just, pretty soon. But, you know, I mean, why start today, really? And it's just so fascinating to see.
So just watching this form of resistance come up, where it's kind of under the radar, it sounds like.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a conscious conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But it also sounds like, what's happening is that I'm not going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in support of the person who doesn't do this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not it's not a big conversation. It's just this kind of subtle undermining of like a decision today today is going to be different. This person is going to do these things.
Yeah. I don't know if this is what you were pointing at, but what I just saw when you were reflecting that is it's in support of the identity
yes.
of resistance, but it's not supporting the being. Because in every case that I've noticed it, it's like something like a supplement where that's going to be supportive to the being. And there's this, there's another example where I just watch it go, you know, it's something really supportive, something I really want to do, whoever, you know, that is. And it's like this, yeah, that's a great thing to do pretty soon. Yeah, yeah, no, we're definitely going to do that soon. Yeah. Yeah. But not, you know, not now.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting. It kind of gives me the idea that, well, yeah, okay, yeah, kind of, you know,
yeah,
taking you along. Yes. It sounds really nice. Exactly. We'll do that, but you know, just wait.
Pretty soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably if it could, because of it, if it said outright no,
yeah,
you're not, then you'd be on to it.
Which is a good point, because I am. You know, I'll hear a voice like, again, I'm trying to think of the content. It'll be these tiny little things like, you know, pass something on the path that needs to get picked up or something. And hear this voice that goes, I'm not picking that up. And I'll go, oh, really? Huh. And immediately turn around and go pick it up. Because that has become such a cue. I'm not doing that. And that's immediately a cue. I mean, just like, just happened. I'm not talking to group. Well, I guess I'm talking to group. So it doesn't do that. Yeah, pretty soon. No, that's good. No, that's not a bad thing. Yeah, we'll do that pretty soon. And just never get around to it. So it's really pretty fun to catch on to it.
That's really, yeah, it's great to catch on to that. And yeah, you see how that just runs through my whole life too, as well.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
Bill.
Well, interesting for me, that one thing I've been looking at that I caught, you know, I catch something kind of like what Jim's saying, is the unexamined beliefs and assumptions that live underneath. And in my image is this big iceberg, and I only see the tip, and then there's all this unexamined, you know, stuff underneath that's under the radar. And what brought it to my attention, and then kind of saw what it did, was I was at work, and I was just doing everything like I always do it, and I noticed I was in a, what do you call, you know, quotes, bad mood, you know. And then I heard myself say something, you know, like, oh, there's, they're just giving me too much work to do, or, you know, I don't, whatever, didn't matter. But I caught that because, well, this time when I caught it, because I catch that a lot, but this time when I caught it, it was like, now wait a minute. You know, I really like this job. I really like working for these people. I really like the whole spirit of service this job is, and the assistance, the you know, how I give assistance to all this. And I saw how there's something underneath that creates, it's kind of a cycle or something, you know, where it creates, and it's hard for me to put it in words, but that voice, that words were the tip of the iceberg that made me look underneath. And saw that conditioning's putting in, I don't know how else to say it, but beliefs, you know, here and there and things like that to cause the quote-unquote bad mood. And then, and I could see how if that without practice, without this practice, without examining stuff, a person could just go on and on in life thinking, you know, to me the thing that came up was, boy, this could really ruin a good time. And it does, because I have a good time at work when this isn't there. And I can see how it can ruin a life, you know, just clear across the board. And if this kept up, I could say, oh, I got to have a new job. This is, you know, there, blah, 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 you know. And I saw how this unexamined beliefs work just, you know, in just about any topic we could think of in our life.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see that, just that little sentence, they're giving me too much to do. You know, what is behind, you know, all the beliefs that must go under that about what's the right amount of work, what's, you know, what would be comfortable for this person, what, you know.
Exactly.
All of the stuff that goes on, that, like you said, is just never looked at, and it's just thought of as the way it is.
Yeah, yes, and you know, and to, and when I'm not, you know, say, paying attention or whatever, they can, those voices can just, or not even the voices, they're just assumptions, and those voices can just cause, you know, not having a good time when without that, it's a, you know, life's a good time.
Right. It kind of goes back to, you know, what was talked about earlier. I'm not the kind of person that does this much work, or not, you know, just that whole belief system.
Exactly. Yeah. Probably the comfort zone is probably an assumed zone, you know, that we have. And so, anytime it's, you know, we have to move out of it, we're not even realizing that we're out of an assumed made-up zone. So what I saw was everything is such a lie that it's everything we say all the time, but a truly lie, we're living a lie. That's a lie that we're living when we're mixed up with the assumptions and the belief systems that we don't even know. And that's like conditioning's reality, when reality is like basically a good time in some way or form, you know.
Yeah, just really looking at what it's like to be caught up in that, quote, reality of conditioning versus, you know, just being present and what a good time that is without all those beliefs and assumptions and stories.
And without this practice, a person could live their whole life in that reality. That's the sad part.
Right.
You see it all the time.
And I'm sure we can all relate to that place before practice when we were living in that not good time.
Kind of along those lines, you know, I've often heard it pointed to in practice that if we find ourselves in one of those suffering thought things, that it might be so that right before that we were actually in a great place of well-being. And I just had this experience right this morning when we were sitting. I was sitting and breathing and, you know, just I was actually just present and having a great gratitude for all of the people breathing in this room and enjoying the practice. And then this voice said, well, but, you know, I don't know if it didn't say anything, but it pointed to, well, I don't know if your breathing is quite normal. And I said, for one thing, I'm listening for that voice a lot lately, and I said, excuse me, I was having a really good time just a minute ago, so I think I'll go back there, you know. But how easily I could have gone, oh my God, well, yeah, what are we going to do about that, you know? And it's for the same thing, you know, if you aren't paying attention, you could begin to think that was your whole experience.
Right.
Rather than this great moment of presence and gratitude I've just been having.
It's really interesting to see how those great moments are just wanting to be siphoned off, you know,
I also had a moment in sitting one day this week where I saw that on an even kind of larger way. I was kind of looking at, you know, is there somebody in me, is there a young one that really just hasn't been attended to, that hasn't been healed and is, you know, and there was some kind of thinking process going on about, I don't know, something along the lines of, you know, conditioning just won't let me see that trauma, so I can't take care of her. And then all of a sudden I just had this moment of aha that said, no, conditioning doesn't want me to see the little one that was absolutely fine before that. That's what conditioning doesn't want me to see. You know, it does not, because I think I've said this before, but when I had to write this ordination paper when I was going in the ministry, the first paragraph of it said, as long as I have been alive, I've known that life was both to be trusted and also could be feared. And I thought, conditioning doesn't want me to remember that place of knowing that life can be trusted. Mm-hmm. It wants to keep me in that life is fearful place.
Absolutely.
And that's that same thing on a macro scale of that moment of not wanting me to stay in that moment of gratitude and breathing.
Yeah. Absolutely. How hard it works to see how much of the time you are absolutely present in gratitude. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, would want you to believe that all of your life is spent with
suffering.
It.
Yes.
Suffering.
Suffering, having a terrible time.
Right. Yeah. It really goes back to that ability, training ourselves to focus the attention.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's been practicing not thinking that has made all of this seem possible. Mm-hmm. Because I really have been here more lately, and I realize when you're here, things are very clear.
Do you want to say a little bit about the practices for folks in the room that might not be?
Yeah, and I guess I would describe it as really directing the attention to, literally not thinking, to, you know, clearing the mind, dropping the stories, only paying it, just paying
just
attention.
Coming back to the breath.
Just coming back to the breath, just focusing on here.
And I'll sometimes focus on counting the out breaths.
Yeah.
Just go
back
to that and drop the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Starting over at one.
Yeah.
Two.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
One. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And the more I've been attending to that, you know, the more I can see conditioning getting agitated, you know. It's very relaxing, it's very wonderful, and then the more wonderful it gets, the more I can feel literally the conditioning's anxiety at, I need to stop this.
Yeah. I just got this image of conditioning just screaming, no, don't do that, don't go back to one. You know, this is really real.
Yeah.
You've got to stay here with me.
We've got to
figure this thing out.
Yes.
We've got to know what we're going to do
this
afternoon.
Yes, exactly.
It's kind of going back to what June said in the beginning, you know, it's like calling it out.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to complain so much,
right,
this has got to be a great thing to do. I'm going to go back to it.
That's right. I'm going to go back to
one. Drop it.
That's right. Yeah.
In the vein of the not thinking and the stuff that's under the iceberg, the tip, I had a kind of a place of a little workshop lately to see some of those things in bold relief. So I volunteered to take something on. The thing came up, and I just said, I'll do that one. And so good, you know, because I've been practicing that, you know, saying yes and not. The fearful part of me will always just say no right off the bat, because it doesn't really matter what the reasons are. There's always a lot of reasons not to do things, because of the wrong person will not be able to do them and all of that. So somebody in me just said, okay. And actually that person thought, well, it can't be that hard. It doesn't sound hard. And once I started doing it, there was a lot more to do than just the surface. Yeah, I had to do a lot even to get to the part. And so I'll stop for a minute if that feels like a good place to.
So you stepped out there and said yes.
Yeah.
When normally it would be looking at the situation and, you know, coming up with all kinds of reasons why it wouldn't work, and a fear around maybe not being able to do it. And somebody thought, well, this isn't going to be that bad. You know, this could be, you know. She said yes, and there was also another person, there was someone present who thought, oh, sounds doable.
Yeah, I don't even think the person who said yes thought this can't be that bad, because it was just like that. Because it was kind of obvious that I needed to say yes anyway. But in the practice of saying yes and working with trusting, mm-hmm. I just did.
So the yes was just real spontaneous, and it really came from that place of I'm going to step forward and say yes.
Yeah, and I am using the word I, and there's, you know, it's in the quotation marks, and there's a number of I's who played in this whole scenario. So then I go off to do this thing and find out that, oh boy, it's a big job, you know, and I don't really know how to do this. I mean, I had to do research and of things that I don't know, areas I don't know anything about. And so I had the opportunity in doing the project to just see a lot of all of the eyes who don't, the sharing was, I don't, you know, the person who said, I don't do these things, and the assumptions and all that. And I could just see my whole life playing out doing this thing. I could see where, how fear comes up and what effect it has. I could see how hurt comes up and how what effect it has. I could see anger come up, you know, when I started to get it that I volunteered for this thing and I don't know if I can do it, and wow, it's really a bigger job. And anger, and then resentment, and I mean my whole life played out, and I actually got to a place, it's not all done yet, but I got to a place that was, that felt, I felt this really sense of accomplishment, not just with the job, but to have gone through all of those steps that could have been showstoppers.
Exactly, as you were saying that, what I saw was, you know, there was, someone thought she was saying yes to a job, but she was actually just saying yes to life and to an opportunity to watch the process around it, and an opportunity to watch how you cause yourself to suffer. So it wasn't really...
Exactly.
That was what the yes was about.
Exactly, and isn't that always the case?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Whether we say yes or no, we get to see actually if we're there, if we're willing to, yeah. And so, I mean, it's just, it's just always amazing how much just is there all the time, you know. It's like just this fountain of stuff to be aware of all the time in even the simplest of things.
So true. It goes back to that, no reason to be bored.
No reason to be bored. I remember one time we talked about if a mouse ran across the meditation hall, we would each of us see our lives in our response to that, and it's kind of like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that pyramid thing, I'm sure all of that's going on in every single thing all the time, that everything we bring to that, from that, at that point in our lives, is what is the pyramid, is the underneath part. Not pyramid, is it? But it's shaped like one. It's the underneath of the iceberg.
Yeah. One of those pointy things.
Right.
With the
bottom. Triangular things.
A lot going on underneath.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to talk some more.
Okay.
talking about iceberg. And things that can, that go subtle, that'll just really get way down to the bottom of the iceberg. some have talked about it here many times. The voice that says, don't talk in group, compares what I say to what other people say. So it's just another example in this life of comparing the thing that process that compares everything I say and do, feel, assesses good or bad relative to other people, and chooses Zen monks to compare herself to. You know, someone that we would all kind of agree is a Zen master, mm-hmm. and compares mm-hmm. herself to that person. Mm-hmm. The best golfer on the planet compared to that person. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I just want to say it out loud once again. Mm-hmm. That goes on. Sometimes it's very obvious, mm-hmm. but it gets very subtle when the voice is saying, don't talk in group. Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing that what it's really saying is, you don't say anything, we're hearing. Mm-hmm. And that might be true, but I don't care. You know, what I hear, I've never, as far as I can remember, I've never heard anyone say anything in group that I rejected. They shouldn't have said that. That wasn't worth hearing. It's just me.
It's just
me. Yeah, I'm the only one.
Yeah, the only one on the planet. Yeah. It's interesting, as if life, the expression of life through you somehow is inadequate or wrong. Or, it's good to see that it's got that comparison thing going on. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I've been doing a practice for the last few weeks that feels like it touches on a lot of what folks are pointing at, which is to set a timer and every hour make a note of what is going on in here. And it's really helpful. Mm-hmm. I've actually been able to do it, which is amazing, because mm-hmm. I have that go later.
A little subtle form of resistance
that over a very short period of time has me completely forgetting what it was that the practice was going to be. Mm-hmm. But remarkably, mm-hmm. It's been possible to just set a timer for every hour and then make a note about what the conversation is touching on. Mm-hmm. And it's so incredibly helpful to see, first of all, there's almost always, I would say 80% of the time there's conversation going on. It's mm-hmm. not just, I'm here doing. Mm-hmm. It does happen, I'm here doing whatever. But there'll be conversation, and it seems really random. And I'm also aware that we talk about things coming through our karmic filter, uh-huh. that it often has just a little bit of a slant that reinforces the perspective that conditioning has built in of how the world is. Mm-hmm.
So seeing and stopping every hour that what's coming through is actually helped to be seen through a karmic filter to reinforce this being, this I.
The
experience, of life.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just so helpful to have written down so I can go back at the end of a day or the end mm-hmm. of a week and see the kind of stuff, to be kind, that it just sort of seems like background, but in fact, sort of like they give me too much work. It's that kind of being able to, I think that it is really reinforcing the karmic reality that doesn't have a very broad perspective.
Mm. That's great. I don't know that many probably karmic realities have very many broad perspectives.
Which is the point of karmic reality, I imagine. Yeah,
little pinholes.
Pinholes in a box.
So I'm wondering if it's helping you to notice it a little more.
That, oh, absolutely. That's and notice I knew that it was constant, but in writing down every hour, it just really, it's a huge support in recognizing how conditioning does what it does.
Yeah, and what you're saying, I just thought, you know, how it does what it does is in our unconsciousness. And, you know, to just have a practice like that, to really focus and to bring us out of that unconsciousness and, mm-hmm. and to see that, you know, it's not very creative, it's not very bright, you know, it's just to just start to see how it continually reinforces that identity and it continually just siphons that life force off.
Yeah, as you were saying that, I just saw this little spotlight in the dark room.
Huh? Oh yeah, going around. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Amy, I saw your hands.
I wanted to speak up and share. I've been I haven't been sharing.
Well, it seems good on this side of the room. The voices are saying don't share, and folks are doing the opposite. So
that was really helpful, that discussion about that. And what I've been looking at is going through what I would describe as a really difficult time, and what I've been seeing though is that it feels like there are these like these parallel tracks or these parallel experiences of that. There's the difficult time, and then I've also been putting a lot of attention on being in my body, and I've been noticing the energy in my body moving in a way that I've never noticed before. I'm not even sure. I don't know if it feels significant somehow, but
it brings up what was being talked about earlier, that, you know, there two things going on. One, the conditioning would want to pull your attention to of it being really a really a difficult time for you. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there's something else going on mm-hmm. that sounds like quite transformative. Mm-hmm. And it would not want you to put your attention on that fact. Mm-hmm. But you are aware of that going on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I've been practicing putting my attention there more and more. And so it's just this interesting phenomenon of this, like, just really just being in this difficult time, and then it feels like there's, like, just this movement towards being grounded in my body and connected and connected to my heart mm-hmm. and just even in the midst of just all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm reminded that being in the body of being here, mm-hmm. being in this present moment mm-hmm. And just having much deeper, it sounds like just having a much deeper experience of that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know I put up a little sign in my hermitage to help me to remember to tell or to focus on the real story, like was, you know, has been mentioned this morning. Mm-hmm. To, like, that is what's real. Mm-hmm. That being in the body, that energy shifting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just feeling my feet on the ground and really feeling them mm-hmm. on the ground. Mm-hmm. It makes whatever else is going on less I'm quite sure if I can find the right word, but it loses some relevance or something. I'm just focused on the feet on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not as real as the feet on the ground, it sounds like.
having this amazing energy experience, and I'm so grateful for breakfast. So I had some, there's an external thing that triggered a reaction, and if I didn't know about projection, I think it was about the external thing. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing, you know, is knowing that what I think I'm seeing out there is all what's being projected out there. Mm-hmm. And so it keeps bringing me back to what's happening here, you know, who's involved here, mm-hmm. what's involved here. Mm-hmm. And I think part of what's happening is getting in touch with just a much larger energy than I'm accustomed to, I'm accustomed to allowing, and or the conditioning is accustomed to allowing. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that feels clear about the whole process, which has gone on for some time, is the importance, A, of staying with the process, just staying with it. And the second is that there's nothing I will come to know about this by thinking about it.
So staying with the process, and rather than turning to distraction or, you know, anything to get out of this feeling, it sounds like, which is not entirely comfortable, and that there's nothing to be gained in thinking about it.
Yeah, that if I think about it, the thinking attaches stories to it, mm-hmm. that are really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But if I don't think about it, it's just energy. And then what's happened over the course of several weeks is that things simply arise. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh. And
when you say things arise, that you're referring to insights or awarenesses.
Mm-hmm. Awarenesses arise. Never from thinking about it, just from allowing it to be. Mm-hmm. And they just happen, you know. And if I shied away from it, or if I didn't understand that this is projection, this is something happening internally, if I stayed focused on the external yeah. triggers, I would miss it all.
Mm-hmm. You'd be out there busy trying to change them or change that situation and miss all of this richness that is yeah. going on inside.
Yeah. And the other thing that comes up, it was coming up during the sit this morning, is just that sense of, you know, I have no idea who this person is. Mm-hmm. I have no idea mm-hmm. what this energy means, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those moments of just ride it, you know. Mm-hmm. Just ride it, because what it is, where it's going, who this is, mm-hmm. it's just all fabrication, mm-hmm. unless I just live it.
Just live it and just be in the mystery of it and mm-hmm. see where it's all going.
Yeah. Know?
And just the trust, what comes up for me too, is just the trust involved in that, in the building of trust. It's what we say in the recitation, you know, ever-expanding faith. And it seems to me that that's how that faith gets developed, is to just be willing to go with it and ride it.
It's how it develops, and thank God for it.
And thank God for it.
Because it could be, you know, it could be so scary and confusing otherwise.
Yeah. Absolutely. And scary and confusing, as you said, comes with the thinking about it, the stories that would want to attach themselves to it.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you.
Alex.
And I was relating to the part of the conversation where we were looking at comparison.
Comparison.
And it doesn't just do it with externals. For me, it starts to do it with how I used to be.
Oh, it just compares you to you.
To that old Alex.
You know, it's like how I was this morning, how I was yesterday. and I watch how that comparison sets up a dynamic of I'm trying to get somewhere, or mm-hmm. there's someone that's being worked on, or I'm trying to get something, mm-hmm. Accomplish something. Which is how it's really the first step for me, how something gets taken away. You know, like an initial impulse to, say, doodle or something like that turns into, well, what's this going to amount to anyway, you know? And it's like, how close is it to looking like what it's supposed to be. And now you need all these supplies in order to doodle correctly.
Talk about any joy that would have been possible. It's gone.
Yeah, well, and it's really tricky because I think that a lot of the world really supports that kind of thing. At least in my family, it's like, why are you doing that if you aren't going to earn money from it? Or, you know what I mean? It's like that kind of thing. You went to what school? You want to do that? In any case, it's like just this recent thing that I'm very interested in doing, that kind of same kind of thing. Like I'm trying to go for it's actually even geared toward getting you to a particular place. And so it's very tempting to want to think that
the whole conditioning program?
Process. No, it's actually like it's an exercise program.
Oh, okay.
It's a literal setup. You know, it's like day one you do that, day two you do that, okay. And so you go through this whole thing. And you're supposed to get to a particular place, and you're supposed to have whatever you get at the end. And it's like the whole thing is like designed to kind of like catapult people into thinking that this is going to be, I just watch it as it's going along, it's the whole motivation thing behind it. But it's like when I watch around that and practice in general, it's almost like what I keep walking away from is, it's like, do this and only good things will happen.
Uh-huh.
Do that and only bad things will happen. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, yeah, I can drink the soda, and the potato and the bread and the pasta for lunch, and I'll have this life experience, or I do this and I'll have this life experience. And it's almost like if I do this, then I'll get that. And it's almost like doing that process is already getting that. It's like just the impulse to, because I have tremendous resistance to this. I talked about it as a love-hate thing. It's like tremendous resistance to doing the thing that takes most care of me. And I'll just underline that for myself, because I think that that's true across the board. If there's anything that I get resistance to, it's doing the thing that will take the most amount of care for me. And so I watch how as I'm experiencing the resistance, I'm doing the steps necessary to overcome it at the same time. This particular thing is exercise. So I'll watch how I'm not doing this, I don't feel like it, and I'm changing it to the outfit that I use to do it in. And now I'm not doing that, and now I'm putting on the sneakers, and eventually it's like, I'm doing it, so I'm just paying attention to see how that gets, what the levels of stopping me are, because I've seen this before with other things too. I've talked about it with doing the doodle, like taking out the piece of paper is the first step, getting the pen over there next to it is the next step. And why we talk about clearing off the meditation area, not having stuff laying all over us, so that when you actually, when it's time to go to meditate, you don't have to clear away your stuff and set everything up again. It's almost like when I do these good things and I just do them without any kind of comparison or expectation, it's almost like the magic happens regardless of what what conditioning will set up as the outcome or the expectation or the result. It's such a very, the result sense tends to throw the whole thing up into conditioned land.
the focusing on the result of the action throws it up into conditioning land?
Right.
Yeah.
Like that I'm going to have a particular meditation, or that I'm going to have a particular result by doing this. Maybe, maybe not. But I'm doing this thing that is beneficial, that I know overall is going to take care of me. And just keep showing up. It seems to be the bottom line through all of it. Just show up, do good, don't do bad.
Show up, pay attention. Somewhat you're saying, if I was hearing what you were saying correctly, that again, what was talked about earlier, that like you see yourself taking the steps to do the thing while you're hearing another story.
Yeah.
No, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing it. But it's that same kind of parallel reality again, you know, and having that opportunity to shift our attention over to what's really going on. That this is a person that's committed and has taken the steps to take to do what supports the being.
Yeah, well, it's like this. I've got the body, and at the same time, it's not going to turn that off. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's ever going to. I'm never going to get into my hermitage and hear, yes, let's do this thing that, you know, it's just, no, it has to
be. If you
do,
then you can be suspicious.
Yeah, right. What's up with that? Well, anyway, I'll report if it starts to encourage me to do things to take care of me. I likely won't be it, it'll probably be something else. I'll probably have my headphones in.
Listening to the recording.
Yay, let's go.
Yeah. And I
think Simmons interpreted.
And I wasn't sure whether this was what you were saying either, but it was what came up for me is that whole thing about the right and wrong. Like, you know, this is totally, this whole track is the wrong track and this whole track is the right track. It seems like both situations could be an occasion to go unconscious. Where, you know, that we're just being called to be present to each opportunity as it arises and weigh it to see whether that is the right next step.
At every moment, yeah.
Yeah, rather than getting onto the right program or the wrong program and just going forward.
It's true, yeah. Like, I mean, it really is about being conscious, because it's true. The program is a structure. It's not based on anything real.
Yeah.
You know, we're required to actually see what's going on.
See that moment by moment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's true.
I was thinking about how helpful it is to have in my recorder that whole thing of it's a lie. You know, it's really all a lie.
It's all.
I was looking at that down here this morning, and you know they have that saying, if you see one jerk, and maybe they're the jerk, but if you see three, and I saw like 5,000 this morning.
Back to that protection exercise.
Exactly. And I knew it. So I had this whole thing going, and what my ego does is it jumps in and it doesn't like the experience that I'm having internally. And so it'll use spiritual practice to try and get away from it, which of course never works. So what it'll do is say, well, you're not enjoying this experience and it's being so painful, so just move your attention to non-thinking. But it's really not moving my attention to non-thinking. It's moving my attention away from what needs to be attended to in the moment, which is this really, these sensations in the body that are super painful. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing what ego can do with sensations to me that makes it more compelling. I didn't do anything too unfortunate. I actually didn't do anything unfortunate, except it was so rich when I don't believe it, or act on it, the sensations in the body are still feel like torture somewhat. It just seems like they have these sensations that are still rippling through, hoping to connect to some belief that will then produce. So ultimately, what I'm saying is, as I'm walking out the door, you must stay here and clean. This house is a wreck. And, you know, I liked what you said or what someone said earlier about if I could have believed that and stayed. And that whole thing
you know, so what it'll say to me is, my life is too busy.
Your life is
and too busy. And I start, if I start believing that, I have one reality. And if I listen to my recorder, which says, the truth is, I love my life. The truth is, I live in Murphy's down the road from the monastery. I love my job. I have three fabulous children and a husband who I really adore. You know, I say these things in. And that's the truth.
That's the truth.
But so often I am believing the opposite. That's why I am so finding that recorder helpful when I get, because I'm having difficulty with the five-year-old. So I had this really neat experience where I'm...
The internal or external?
External. No, I become five.
Five. The projection.
And I think this has happened before. I know it never happened with David, because, you know, he's like a dream. Easy. I'm sure it happened with Clara. And it's not true it didn't happen with David, actually. See? I believe it without even thinking.
It did happen with David.
It flashed out. I remember it happened with David. But I live in the reality of, oh, David's a dream. He's so easy. It's going to be the death of me. The truth is, when I look at it, she loves me in a way none of my other children do. She's attached to me in a way. She loves me. She wants me. She wants to play with me. She wants to kiss me. She wants to love me. And when I am stuck believing a reality, it's just the separation, you know, the fall comes up. And when I can listen, so I was recording the other day about, I do feel powerless over parenting. You know, I'm a therapist and I work with kids who actually have diagnoses. I'm like, Sophie's oppositional defiant disorder. No, she's not recording. No, she's just five. She needs drugs. I need drugs. No, you don't need drugs, and neither does she. But I was recording about how powerless I am. And, you know, I was stuck in it. You know, you get to record when you're just, like, in it. Yeah. But then you get to turn to the mentor, which for me is God. And I have this great thing. I'm going to turn into this evangelical Christian. All right, Lord Jesus, come in and give me the answer. Because Jesus is my mentor. And I am telling you every time. Woo!
No fail.
No fail. I got to write Sherry a thing. I mean, this is why I came to practice. Look at that. Constant communication with God. And that is what I have. You know, and it comes in and it says just the right thing. You can do this. You know, I can't remember what it said. It says the truth is, you're the mom. The truth is, you have tools. And it starts listing all the things that when I'm identified, I don't remember. The truth is, you're a person and mom of great compassion. And you have practiced for 19 and a half years, and you know just how to do it. And I'm like, I do know what I'm doing. But when we're locked in, we're just like, oh, you're right, I'm the worst mom, I'm going to go home, and this is how it's going to look, and she's going to get me, and I'm going to be tied to the floor. It feels like when we're stuck.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to yell, because that's the only thing with her, but yelling doesn't work with her, so that's not even true. You know, what works with her is what works with me. A little bit of time and attention. And, just like here, like monastic training, we're still going to follow the schedule. Still got to brush your teeth. Still got to go to bed. Help!
Which we know ultimately is what works with us too, following the schedule.
Totally! And it tames that thing, because last night what happened was, she was tired, overtired. And she's screaming, and I'm brushing. Mama's power, Sophie's power. No, I'm not brushing my teeth. It's so funny. But I was somewhat disidentified. I know, you know, well, we're going to brush your teeth, you know, so I'm going to brush teeth. And then, but not easily. She didn't do it. We did together. And then we get to the bedroom, and I'm having to carry her. As soon as she gets in the bed, and I start rubbing her back, and you know, I just talk in a way and rub her back in a way, hoping that her attention will move. Because what she is also just sensations rushing through her body because she's tired. She's completely unreasonable. No, I mean, there are, she's fine anyway, but I know that place in me of being completely unreasonable. And no amount of spiritual practice to make that feel better works. But when I can just, this is it. So I've been using both. I've been using moving the attention, and I'm thinking it's been super helpful. When ego takes a hold of it to move my attention to non-thinking in order to get away from something, I can feel the tension in the body. I'm not in non-thinking. I feel really tense, and so I've been moving the attention back in. Wait a minute, this is it. You know, my favorite thing from sitting still. Wait, this is it. Let's just move our attention here then. Because they're the same place, really, as far as I can tell. It's just how you backdoor ego, it seems to me.
It just seems like what a kindness for your daughter to be in the presence of somebody that's like working with that, moving the attention back here. You know, how that feels when we're totally out of control and just like, you know, what we want is some kind of safe container that just says, you know,
I think she can feel it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially because usually it's at night and I really practice it at night because I'm tired and she's tired. Mm-hmm. And rather than, I used to just, well, this is a new practice last 2 weeks, but there's so much resistance. Please, somebody else put her to bed. You know, and so moving into it rather and really moving the attention to non-thinking, and I also do that, moving the attention to the different, you know, love, abundance, you know, all those things in the system. And I can feel it going into her. It's like people talk about praying for their children, and it works. You know, that there's some kind of thing that happens. I truly feel it and believe it. You know, I have two religions, so I can believe all those things. But I do believe that one, and it may not be true, but I don't care. You know, it feels helpful. Because it feels like there is something surrounding her and moving into her as I am connecting with it myself. And maybe I just want to believe it. It doesn't matter. Except that she goes right to sleep. Or relaxes and starts jabbering. Oh, Mama, did I tell you about? Wait, I was trying to get you to sleep. No. Actually, if I'm present, it's fine. Oh, no, you didn't tell me. Yeah. I'm going to marry Ezra. Okay. But when I'm present, it's just cute.
Yeah.
When I'm wanting to get her to sleep, it ain't cute. It's not cute.
And there's an agenda for her.
There's an agenda. Oh, it's nice. Go to sleep. And
an agenda for ourselves, probably, as well.
So I'm just so grateful to practice and so grateful to the recorder because it really... And I would say that with the recorder, you know, I was a late recorder person. I would say, oh, someday. But, you know,
A little resistance.
First of all, she was crazy to invent it, you know, and then, I mean, there's so much resistance. And then, oh, look at everybody's really getting into it. Well, I'm not going to. You know,
I have to say, as you were sharing that this morning about Jesus and the recorder, I just, that song. Jesus on the main line, tell me what you want. I thought, there you go.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you.
We have a couple of minutes again. Thank you.